All right. Our next case for today is submitted on the briefs and the record, so we will move on to United States against Johnson. Mr. Truitt.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. We raised three issues on this appeal, and specifically three departures that the district court judge imposed to increase the defendant's ultimate sentence to almost 20 years. And this is for possessing, albeit vile, but possessing a number of images on his hard drive. I would submit that individuals who manufacture this probably don't get a sentence of this length.
That's because they aren't caught.
That may
That's
be
the
true.
Problem.
Yes, that may be true. Or.
But in any event, our case is Mr. Johnson's case, and we need to consider, particularly in light of Booker, whether there is any reason to think that Judge Lozano would have imposed a sentence different from the one he chose. I take it you're principally making then an argument that's, let's say, within the guideline structure as opposed to going beyond?
Well, that's the way it started out, and I did raise the Blakely issue, and now that has become Booker. I think under Booker, the district court must make a guideline analysis. We believe that the court's guideline analysis was flawed. Now, the guideline analysis doesn't end the inquiry. The court then must make a 3553 analysis and wind up at a reasonable sentence. But certainly, the guideline analysis is going to have some impact on the judge's thinking. And if these departures, some or all of these upward departures, were ruled improper, then the court's subsequent analysis may be different. And if the court continued to impose the sentence that it did, then the government would, or the defendant would have a right to challenge that sentence before this court on reasonableness. And I think.
Are you raising that issue now?
Well, I think it's premature, Your Honor, to raise the reasonableness issue at this time because we don't know what the district court is going to do.
Well, but if you were to lose on your basic guidelines challenges, if we were to agree with the government's position in the district court that the three upward adjustments that the court made were consistent with the structure of the guidelines, permissible kinds of adjustments, whatever you want to call it, then the ultimate Booker slash Palladino issue would be there, would it not?
That's correct. It
so
would
we're
be
not
there.
Really.
I
think
still
we kind
would
of
have
are
the,
there, at least the, contingently.
Yeah, the defendant would still have the right to make an argument that the sentence that had been imposed and the sentence that the
to
court
today's
has
the day to
felt
make that,
that
argument,
it was reasonable.
I
would have the right to present whatever factors are suggested or mandated in a 35.
If the case is affirmed under the Lee case and is ever sent back to the district court, when are you going to make that argument?
Well, that's a good question, Your Honor, because I guess I wouldn't have an opportunity to make that case if it was reaffirmed and not remanded back under Palladino, or at least a limited remand to see if the court. And I guess at that situation.
I think today's the day. I mean, given that Lee is. I mean, our circuit has tried to describe both the Palladino situation, and Lee happens to be a case where there was abundant evidence on the record that the district judge wasn't going to go any lower, and the government's arguing that this is the same kind of case. And so, I mean, I realize you don't have much time to make all these arguments, but it would be worth a moment to address that.
Well, one of the factors this court recently decided, in fact, I think it was last Friday, United States versus Grapp, where they this court concluded that facts that were not admitted by the defendant, nor were found by a jury beyond a reasonable doubt, did not authorize the district court to make those findings as far as its guideline analysis. We think the guideline analysis is flawed. What are the factors?
Well, I mean, the reasonableness argument.
Yeah. What are the factors that I would point out? I would point out that this person has gone through all of his life being a productive person through a combination of an accident when he was driving a truck, which resulted in severe back injuries, now a heart condition. He managed to live a very law-abiding, productive life, but for 3 months, from January to March of 2002, when for whatever reason he became interested in child pornography and downloaded child pornography on his computer. Included in that, on a reasonableness standard, would be the images containing bestiality. But that has to weigh something in the court's calculation that this is a first offense of any kind.
But I think what the court's doing, you know, forget about Booker for a moment. What we used to ask about departures, and which I think you're right, is still quite relevant to ask, since the Supreme Court made it very clear that the guidelines are still there as an advisory body of experience in terms of sentencing. There was already a departure for sadistic or masochistic content. And the legal decision the district court makes is that bestiality is something different from sadism and masochism. And I understand your argument that you think, no, it's a subset. But as a sheer linguistic matter, it seems to me that you've got an uphill battle. It is a separate, I mean, there are factual distinctions without going into unpleasant detail between the two.
And I think the linguistic analysis is somewhat flawed. I think the issue that the court has to focus on in evaluating the appropriateness of this departure is, does this produce a quantifiable additional harm to a child than the sadistic or masochistic conduct?
But why is that the question?
Does this make it a much more heinous crime, possessing these items, than possessing the items that he's already been and factored in for of sadistic and masochistic behavior? And if so, is that four levels necessary to address that additional harm?
But isn't the adjustment consistent with the structure of the guidelines in a couple of ways? First of all, they do focus on particularly bad content. Secondly, they do indicate what kind of an upward adjustment should be made for that kind of content. In other words, the district judge, I thought, tied what he was doing as well as he could, as well as one usually sees, to the structure of the guidelines. That was always the analysis under departures.
That's correct. I mean, he followed the structure of the guidelines, but he mechanically followed the structure of the guidelines and did not follow the purpose of the guidelines or the purpose of punishment, the purpose of sentencing, rehabilitation, protection from society of this individual, and that mechanical application didn't focus in on the kinds of harm and the kinds of things that the guidelines were seeking to translate into formulas or numerical formulas based on offense levels. Also, I would like to point out that the government has spent a great deal of time arguing that the court can look at subsequent amendments to guide its discretion. And I think, as a general rule, that's correct. But this particular amendment was not a product of the Sentencing Commission. It was not based on research. It was not based on their coming to the conclusion that there was a flaw in the guidelines that needed to be addressed. This was part of this five for number of images and over 600 images,
600, yeah.
five levels, was a result of the PROTECT Act, which was part of the Feeney Amendment.
Right, no.
And the debate lasted twice as long as the time we have allotted for, well, exactly the same amount of time that we have allotted for this oral argument.
No, nonetheless, it's an act of Congress, Mr.
It is Truitt. An act of Congress, but I guess I'm not sure if that has the same weight because...
Right, you need to wrap up.
That it would if it had been a result of the guidelines. Thank you.
Right. Your position is that the ultimate sentence, 20 years, is unreasonable. Is that correct?
I think it is, Your Honor.
You intended to argue that at a later date, but you may not have that later.
When I think I can rob a bank with a machine gun and get a less sentence, yes, I think it is clearly unreasonable, inhumane. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Mr. Benson?
May it please the Court and Counsel, Philip Benson for the United States from the Northern District of Indiana. The government absolutely believes that Judge Lozano properly exercised his discretion. First, he did not have to. He could have not departed upward. That argument was vehemently made by defense counsel. But he chose to do that. So he clearly recognized that he had the ability to exercise his discretion. Secondly, he clearly did exercise it, but in a very reasonable fashion. In this case, the district court, was presented with images that almost have never been discovered in criminal search and seizure. The testimony at the district court level, and those exhibits were forwarded to this court. They are absolutely, as the judge pointed out, I think very appropriately, that the images are absolutely appalling. The judge stated that in his 37-year career, he had never encountered such vile nature of children being violated, and he had never seen those images in 16 years on the bench. And that is totally supported by all of the testimony presented by various experts who came into that courtroom and said they had almost never seen these pictures. I believe the testimony was that the postal inspector had never seen them. He had called the central location in Washington where these cases are cleared to. That person had never seen images that have been forwarded to this court for their review, the bestiality images. Not just one, not just two, but all various types of sex act being performed on and by children on animals and by animals.
Mr. Benson, from a methodological point of view, is it the government's idea that in all of these post-Booker cases, what we should do is first assess whether the district court correctly applied the guidelines, both from the usual, you know, factual and legal interpretation points of view, and then, you know, sort of phase two of the inquiry, say, and did this produce, you know, a reasonable sentence? You know, is it your idea that are you guys asking the district judges now to explain why it is they may be choosing sentences different from the guidelines?
I think the judges have taken it upon themselves, absent any inquiry from the government or the defense counsel, where they will say, this is the guideline sentence, and I am imposing this because I find the guidelines in this case to be reasonable and a just and fair sentence.
So if in this other case, to take the last point Mr. Truitt made, they said, you know, we've done the guidelines calculations, they come up with something upwards of 20, I guess it's 4 months short of 20 years, but since somebody who commits armed bank robbery or some other, you know, offense would have only gotten half of this much, we think that this in this instance is an unreasonable sentence and I'm going to go down, you know, 5 years, 60 mm-hmm. months or whatever. I mean, are they saying anything like that, or is that what you envision needs to happen so that we can do this review?
No, I think that in this case, we have the unique situation as posed in Lee, that the judge didn't have to do any of this to begin with. And that might make a difference where if the judge would have been bound to do this had he followed the guidelines very strictly. And that's why I say that this is exactly the type of case that Lee envisioned when it talked about, you know, when a court departs upward. I can't think of it a case fitting more squarely within the parameters of that very small exception that Lee made for upward departures. Because and I believe it's very clear that the judge would impose the very same sentence again, given his statements about what he had seen on the bench during his legal career, and the court themselves have seen these pictures. The quantity of them, too. It's sort of important to point out that the testimony was originally there were 10 to 12,000 images of child pornography. The government, the 4,000-plus images that are discussed at sentencing, are only the ones where the children are under 12 years old. The court only considered those even, and that was really an exercise of their discretion. They didn't say, I'm giving them, you know, I'm going to raise his sentence five levels pursuant to the amendment that had been passed, or to use that as a guide, because he had 10 to 12,000 images. He only took the pictures that are most egregious, and those were with the children under 12, and the government did that, so there'd be no argument as to whether or not pictures were being included that could arguably not have been child pornography. Counsel.
Apparently, Mr. Truitt was going to argue that the total was unreasonable, and he was going to do that at some later date, but there may not be a later date. So is that issue before us? Is that we joined issue on the reasonableness of the sentence?
The total level of departure. Judge, I believe it absolutely is reasonable. I'm not sure as I stand here whether the court has to make that determination or not, but I feel very confident if the court does feel they have to reach that, then it is.
Because it seems to me, if you're, let's just say for the sake of argument, suppose this is the kind of case Lee's talking about, that still leaves the basic guidelines arguments as important arguments to consider, because if the judge makes a mistake in applying the guidelines, then we certainly don't have any confidence that's the sentence the judge would have reached, right?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor.
And so we do need to reach these three just traditional old guidelines arguments that Mr. Truitt's raising, whether bestiality is the same as sadomasochism, whether the amendment made by the PROTECT Act was correctly used as a guidance for how many levels to go up and so on.
Yes, I believe the court does. Clearly the judge in the record shows this, felt he didn't have to follow that amendment, but was only using it as a guide, as rightfully he could do, to try and gauge the departure, how much should it be, try and give you what Congress's new intent was, and he clearly indicated that he was exercising his discretion. He was not sort of ex post facto applying that amendment. That was very clear in the record. And regarding the images of bestiality and whether or not they're sadomasochistic, they're clearly different. Black's Law Dictionary, when it talks about sadism and masochism, talks about conduct between human beings. I don't think anybody in this courtroom can honestly say that it isn't more degrading to be raped by an animal than another human being. You know, given the alternative, what would someone choose? And that's really the issue. Is bestiality really worse and different from sadomasochism? Absolutely it is, and this court should so hold. The counsel said that, well, maybe the court didn't, you know, because of the constraints of the guidelines, didn't consider certain things that they could now consider. We believe the court did consider that, because in the sentencing colloquy, the judge stated, I've considered all of the facts in this case. I considered what would be a fair sentence. I have considered, I'm reading verbatim from page 26 of the sentencing transcript, I have considered very strongly what hopefully would send a message to other individuals who are thinking about these types of crimes, that this is off limits. Our children are off limits, and this court will protect them at all cost. The court went on page 27 to further state, I have considered what can be done with you to get some help. I think you need some help, Mr. Johnson. I have considered your health, and I have considered the fact that I want rehabilitation to the extent possible. I believe that those are the exact same kind of things that if this court were to remand, the judge would just consider. Those are the exact factors that the defendant would want to argue. I believe the court absolutely considered all of the relevant factors and imposed a reasonable sentence. And the conduct in this case wasn't just the pictures. Counsel said that, he lived a law-abiding life, and this only began in January of 2002 through March of 2002. But these culture research team videos that were put in evidence, the bills on those, the paid receipts indicated that he had received some of those in 1998, long before his live-in girlfriend ever became a foster parent and they started having children in his home. The very child that he surreptitiously videotaped by mounting a video camera in his bathroom when the child would go use the bathroom and videotape it. So I disagree with counsel's representation that this person has led a law-abiding life forever. This started back in 1998 with the possession of those videotapes, and it continued on and escalated. It's a pattern that this court has seen over and over, the escalation of pedophiles. They don't just go out and first do something with a child. In this case, he obtained videos, these culture research team videos. He then put himself in a position to have children in his house. He then taped those children and then got the worst pictures of child pornography and bestiality that the district court had ever seen and that had only seen twice. There were no reported cases of someone being sentenced for pictures of bestiality. None. And that's why the court had to do this analogy to the sadomasochism and the four-level upward departure. And I ask the court not to remand this case and uphold the sentence the district court imposed. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Mr. Truitt, anything more? Your time had run out, but I'll give you a minute if you would like to.
I wanted to bring up one point. If the court finds that the district court's guideline analysis is flawed and remands it back, I think there's an ex post facto argument that could be made. Since Mr. Johnson was sentenced under a mandatory guideline range and had a expectation of being sentenced under a mandatory guideline range, you could argue that that forms, whatever the guideline analysis is, forms the top cap of his sentencing exposure. So I think if this court finds that the guideline analysis performed and the adjustments and the enhancements imposed by the district court were incorrect, I think it very well could lead or result in a shorter sentence for the defendant, even though the judge may say, I would impose that same sentence again. I think that there is an ex post facto argument that is starting to develop, at least through the federal defenders, it's starting
okay.
to develop. Thank you,
Thank
Your Honor.
Thank you very much, Mr. Truitt. Thanks to both counsel. We will take the case under advisement.